Hi, and welcome to the Homeopathy Health Show here on the UK Health Radio Network. I'm Atik.
And I'm Nyla.
We're both professional registered homeopaths, and between us have over 25 years of professional practice in this field of healing.
The Homeopathy Health Show is the voice of homeopathy on radio and podcasts around the world, promoting and raising awareness of this truly unique system of healing and healthcare, which is suitable for all ages, young and old.
Every week, we invite guests from the world of homeopathy to come and share their experiences, their work, offer insights, and essentially talk all things homeopathy.
Visit www.ukhealthradio.com to listen now. To find out more about us, you can visit us at www.homeopathyinpractice.co.uk. And whilst you are there, do subscribe to our newsletter.
Be inspired.
And join the conversation.
So let's begin today's show here on the UK Health Radio Network, the world's number one talk health radio.
Real feel-good radio.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of the award-winning Homeopathy Health Show here on the UK Health Radio Network. I'm Atik.
And I'm Nyla. Welcome, everyone.
It's fantastic, is it not? Ladies and gentlemen, we are into March, and wow, wow, wow. Spring, you know, they always say, don't they, you have a bounce in your step. Daffodils, tulips, petunias. Oh, I don't know what to do. Just the fragrance of everything. But hey, we welcome Anne Vervaeke, and she is a homeopath from Belgium. And of course, you will know just a few months back, actually in January, we released a live episode of the Homeopathy Health Show with Anne, and she followed on to do a very beautiful webinar on her Family Finder software, which is incorporated in Radar Opus. And that was so, so good. But we really wanted to have an in-depth chat, Nyla and I, with Anne, just to get her thoughts and her background and, hey, maybe some golden nuggets for all you homeopaths. So we welcome Anne. For those who aren't aware, she is very deeply involved in remedy research and has contributed extensively to expanding how we understand and experience remedies, particularly through her explanation of patterns, states, and of course, natural systems. Isn't that so, Nyla?
Definitely. Her work bridges careful clinical observation with a very intuitive, experiential approach to homeopathy. This is a conversation for anyone interested in where homeopathy is going, not just where it has been. And it's such a pleasure to have you with us today. Thank you for joining us.
No, it's my pleasure.
And before we go into any deep homeopathic questions, it would be lovely for our listeners to know, where did your journey start?
Oh, I guess it started with my children. So my baby boy is 53 now. So that's a while ago. And my baby girl is 50 soon, next week, 51. So they had some, you know, not serious, but like a bit of chronic childhood ailments. Now diarrhea, then some rash, then some snotty nose. I don't know what. And I didn't want to give, especially my son, I didn't want to give antibiotics. That was always the solution of the doctor. So finally, I found a homeopath. There seemed to be two, hard to find in Antwerp, in the place that I lived nearby. I chose one. And my experience was that the doctor homeopath actually was prescribing in 5 minutes, scribbling something on a piece of paper, very not involved in my story with my children. He just said, he looked at them and said, oh, I can see that's this and this type. And so, and the other one, the little one, that's that type. And he scribbled something for her. So I wasn't very pleased with his approach, but hey, it worked. So I gave the remedies and the problems were over. And the same happened with my daughter, who had chronic, you know, ear infection. And by the time I was divorced, I moved out in another city, find a homeopath. A little bit of the same story. So the homeopath was not too friendly. And it took a little time, but prescribed pulsatilla, problem was over. So I had good experience, and then there's a big gap because I only started studying when my children were actually almost grown up, because I was single mom for a long time. So the 80s over here in Belgium were considered as crisis periods, so there was not so much work, etc., etc. So I only had some, let's say, opportunity to study when actually my children were studying. And that's where I started. So I was in the beginning of my 30s, not very pleased with the work I had to do, asking myself, but then what do you want to do, and came a bit like, well, homeopathy is something I really like to study, which I did. And it was fast, I was fascinated from the beginning, and I enjoyed studying so much because I didn't need my brains the 12 years or the 15 years before, as I was, doing work that didn't require using your brains. So I was so happy. It was like muscles I didn't use for a long time. And because I was so happy, I even started studying at university at the same time. So for the fun of studying, and I got three, university degrees. And then I had to choose whether to continue in the anthropology, which I did a master after master, or continue with homeopathy. By that time, I also finished my homeopathic studies, like 4 years in Belgium and then another 3 years in Holland, which I did overlapping because I like to start in the third year. Wherever I start studying, I start in the third year. And I do the first and the second year on my own a bit faster. And then I had to choose. Now, the academic career would have been more, let's say, interesting in a financial and status way of living, but I chose homeopathy. I thought it was much more interesting. And so I opened the practice and started the school, etc., etc. That was the beginning of the homeopathic journey now, 37 years ago, something, 38, 40.
What a beautiful, beautiful journey. And you mentioned the 80s, and the 80s actually in the West certainly were very, very important to almost re-establish the foundations of homeopathy. I found that those who did study in the 80s have made such progressive have put so much progress into homeopathy as far as its development is concerned and the thought process, because it took a bit of a blip. As we know, and then it just came back. But your story is very inspiring, isn't it?
It's you know,
crazy.
you're so right. In the 80s, we call it the Renaissance of homeopathy, and actually, that's thanks to Vitulkas. I give him all the credits for that because when I started studying, we studied, the hard way, all the classics, Hahnemann and chronic diseases and Kent and Wöhrücken and Allen and Hering and Clark and all these old books, and you are trying to get all these symptoms in our head and keynotes, and then came Vitulkas. And the story with Vitulkas, it's so funny. I then by that time went to a homeopath for my own health, and I was telling him that I was studying. He was very encouraging, and then one day he said, taking some photocopies from under his desk, he says, "Here, that's for you. Don't tell anybody." And these were the stolen essences of Vitulkas, and they were photocopied after photocopied. They were all notes of other people. Don't tell anybody. And of course, I photocopied them for all my classmates and said the same. So don't tell anybody.
Don't tell anybody.
And everybody in the class had the stolen essence of Vitulkas except the teacher. So this became at a certain moment a bit awkward. We had to study, let's say, anacardium or something, and we all had the anacardium picture from Vitulkas, and the teacher was, flabbergasted, like much more information than he had. So we had to confess at the end. And then, later when I saw Vitulkas in a seminar, he said, "My stolen essence, my essence, I was working and my draft was stolen by Bill Gray, and they translated it and they distributed it, and it was not even ready, that's full of mistakes. For instance, nitricum acidum, I said, it's a pest. That's not right. I hope you don't have it. Who has the stolen essence?" Now the whole hall Everybody lift his hand. Everybody. And then finally, he published them.
Wow.
He should have named it The Publicity of the Stolen Essences.
Yes, it is actually called The Stolen
Such a
Essences. It's
wonderful story.
published. Yeah, can you imagine?
Oh, such a wonderful story. Don't tell anyone. Don't
Don't
tell
tell
anyone and
anyone.
then everyone knows.
Everybody had it, you know.
Everybody had it.
The unspoken, the unspoken word, yes. Everybody had it, but they didn't speak about it.
Really, really enjoyed that story. And now, as we are talking about your years when you were studying, if you could go back and speak to yourself in your first years of practice, what would you gently warn yourself not to do?
My first years of practice. That's a long time ago. You see, we had to study and know 350 remedies for our exam in Holland. So that's a lot of study, eh? The like smaller remedies as we considered at that time. We had the Policrest, and then we had the small remedies. And then I came into practice and ended up by giving, let's say, everybody Policrest. You never prescribe the small remedies. And that for me was such a frustration that I somehow didn't get to these other remedies, didn't see them, didn't spot them, didn't know how to apply it. I would even have stopped with homeopathy out of frustration after a few years, because I find myself capable of talking any lycopodium patients into lachesis. Just give me 5 minutes and I choose other rubrics, and I make a case for just another remedy. So I thought it's a matter of rhetorics, it's not a matter of understanding. So I wish nobody had this confusion or stuck in this predictable prescription, which is not wrong, but it's not precise enough. It's like, yeah, how to say, differentiating between people with the 12 signs of the zodiac. There are more than 12 types of people. You see, it's not wrong, but it's absolutely not precise enough. So I was very displeased finally being into practice with where I landed, where my prescriptions landed. It's always carcinosin because it fits everybody, or lycopodium, same. So if then not Sankran would have come into the scene, I might have stopped out of disappointment.
What are the alternatives? Because I think it's with what you've mentioned with the Policrest, it's for new homeopaths, of course, it's the way to go, isn't it? But then when you if you are into kingdoms, you know, if we can talk about that, because not everybody is, as we know. But if you do look at, we were talking offline about insects, or you look at the mammalian kingdom generally, or birds, one can really go out, because there's even imponderables, you know, there's something for everybody. Every human being has a remedy, his or her remedy, out there, and it's so vast. You know, what's your take on expansion and moving outwards from the bubble of Policrest, or the triangle of Policrest? I don't know.
The station that makes you feel good.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise. Elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Yeah, that's a big question. The polycrests are good archetypes. So it's good to study them. I would encourage everybody to study them as archetypes, like a phosphor-like type or a sulfur-like type or a silica-like type. And okay, if you don't see anything more precise than that, it's appropriate to start from there, knowing that it is like very general. And it always will touch something, because if a remedy has, now seriously, 18,000 symptoms, like a podium, it has to touch something with everybody. So the step from there to more precise prescription, for me, that's my answer, and that's the result of almost 4 decades of experience, is to not prescribe for the symptoms, but for the person, as Hahnemann already said. So that the first question would not be, how do I treat the symptoms? But what kind of person is this, and how can I, or what are the pointers to, let's say, the most essential in this case? So that's another way of thinking. And then eventually, of course, the symptoms should disappear because there are criteria. But the approach is different. We're not treating the symptoms, we're treating the person.
But are the symptoms, we know the symptoms are the expression of the vital force, how it is communicating with the outside world.
Exactly.
Giving the essence of the remedy. So if we see certain symptoms, that those symptoms are the keynote of a remedy, what can we look into in that case? Because sometimes you have a patient who has like a dark cloud. They talk about a dark cloud that's engulfing them. And you think about the remedies like Simisifuga, you think about Orem, deep despair. But you see that they are stuck in a transition phase. They are someone else, and they are meant to be someone else in their real life.
Yeah.
How that doesn't fit with the Orem archetype, though. But the symptoms are expressing the similar picture of Orem. What do we do then?
I'm not sure I got your question. So there are symptoms and they don't fit Orem, but it seems to be an Orem patient. Is that what you're saying?
No, it's the other way around. The symptoms are Orem symptoms,
yes.
But the patient is not Orem.
Oh, okay, because he has some other rubrics that don't fit Orem.
Right? Yeah, like the because we know the Orem, the gold of the society, and he has some higher expectation with himself, and that's why he goes into this despair. But that patient, for example, is more into the let's say in an insect kingdom, that where they are transitioning from one state to another.
Yeah. That's again a vast question. The first thing I think, and that's why I always ask in masterclass situations, etc., what kind of case is this? And the reason why I ask this is that the homeopath decides for him or herself what on what level I want to treat. Is it a physical level, the physical and energy level? That would be a clinical prescription, okay? That is based on the symptoms, whatever the symptoms are. Are the symptoms, let's say, mental, emotional? You can prescribe on mental, emotional level if you want. That's the level of the psyche. And there you have the images. So if somebody would say, I feel like a dark cloud or something, that's an image. Image is level four. Yeah. This is important. Not so much because everybody's psyche is very different. I would rather consider then the way the person using images than the image itself. Yeah. And then if you say, no, I'm going for prescribing for the person, that means level five, yeah, the disturbed dynamis. And then you consider the symptoms on the levels as expressions, which they are. Now, a level four expression is more important than a level three, is more important than a level two. It's a cascade. So that is something that you have to be aware of before you even start to take symptoms and rubric into account. There are a lot of things that seem to be, unusual, strange and peculiar, but they don't form a pattern. They're just, it's like you have a puzzle, and all kind of pieces go together and you see the pattern. And then you have a few pieces that don't seem to fit anywhere. Forget about them. When you already have a pattern, don't be bothered by some detail left or right, even if it sounds strange and peculiar.
This is interesting. So you would, as you mentioned it earlier as well, you would look into if the person is a 2D or a 3D first.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And can you explain for our audience what is 2D for you and what is 3D for you?
Yes, I think it's very helpful, this idea. It came from my patients. I didn't invent it. Actually, in the beginning of the systematics of homeopathy, we differentiated between three kingdoms. It was mineral, plant, and animal, which was good, but I was not really pleased with the exclusion of all the other remedies who didn't fit in these three boxes. I think we're doing it again. First, we try to fit every patient in our Polycrest boxes, eh? And now we try to squeeze them in our system boxes. And what about all those poor patients who need all the other remedies, you know? And there are hundreds of other remedies in our Materia Medica. So that was my first, I could say, reservations against the system that it was limiting again. So then, because I have precognition of the remedies since 15 years. I didn't have it before, although I have to admit that I made some reasonable prescriptions every now and then without precognition, so it's doable without. But it's a help, of course. And then I could hear my patients talking mineral-like, but not needing a mineral remedy. And listening to hundreds of those patients, I came to the conclusion that there is a big difference between mineral-like remedies. And in the map, I put them all on one page. And then plants and animals. And fungi is a different kingdom, but they're very plant-like. So that ended up, that resulted in an understanding that the 2D, which is second dimension, and 3D, which is third dimension. My idea, we have six dimensions. So the first dimension being the core of the iron crystal in the core of the earth, which is magnetic. And with the iron in our blood, we are connected to the earth. Yeah, we are attracted to the earth with the iron in our blood. So the second dimension is everything between the first and the third. That means everything that is under our feet down there, yeah, where you have the elements and the ores and the stones and the rocks and the crystals and all that. So it's another more dense slow world than the third dimension on which we walk and
Mm.
on which plants grow and animals and humans walk. That's 3D. We all know we live in a 3D world. So under our feet are actually the building blocks of everything that exists on 3D. And if you see on the map, the 2D groups contain also carbon compounds. So it's not only carbon, it's also viruses and bacteria, which actually live deep down in the biosphere under our feet. You have the gemstones, of course, which are stones, and rocks and stones are also stones, and waters are mixtures of minerals. And the fun thing is, you can differentiate quite in the beginning of your case taking. So if you know your patient is a 2D or need a 2D remedy, you can forget about all plants and all animals. That makes your life easier, doesn't it? It's at least
It does.
half of the materia medica you don't have to
It's
consider
a big
any other
relief,
way
isn't it?
around.
It's a
Yeah.
relief.
And they're so different. The more I see them, the more I see the differences. So 2D, it's also on the map. They talk about my capacity. Yeah. Can I? Can I not? And 3D is my life. Yeah. My exist, my survival. And 2D is my existence. So 2D is much more about abstract concepts. And also very interesting, they label everything. Once you see your patients labeling everything, not sharing their feelings, but labeling their feelings, you know you're on 2D. It's and 3D, it's much more lively, engaging, details, images, stories. If you ask a plant, what do you mean by stuck? They answer with a story. And they will say, for example, when they start their answer with, for example, it's plant. You don't even have to think about it. Why 2D will give you a definition. It's so different. They say, oh, I mean by stuck, and they get the kind of label or in definition. Once you see those things, it's very easy to differentiate them.
So 2D is black and white, and 3D is a color.
Yeah. Well, not necessarily.
Your 2D color chart is very colorful.
Double-sided.
You are thinking about carbons at the moment and the
Yeah.
diamond.
Yeah.
I'm looking at your color chart, and it is really, really so beautifully laid out. And as you mentioned, one problem and an issue, and this issue is simple: I, me, and mine
Yeah.
into in second dimension, like emptiness, existence, factual, sober, capacity, function, grip, and dependence. So
Yeah.
now, if I'm looking at something happened during the early years of my life, that is the time of development. That is the time of grounding. That is the time of where I am, as I talk in plant language, most of the time, where I'm building my roots.
Yes.
And if there was an issue at those early years, they are 40-year-old now, for example, but the issue is still the same. So whenever they will come in your practice, they will talk about those issues. Or it will be I, me, etc. Then we have to go to those remedies that speak about those issues, like go to your carbons. We see a lot of carbon or carbon-like remedies in our practice. And with younger patients, for example, most of the time.
Yeah.
And you think then these remedies, like the second dimension, we can go there and see the chart and help them. How would you then differentiate between I'm looking at, for example, bacterias, or I'm looking at celestial bodies, for example? How would you differentiate then in the 2Ds?
The station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movement and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
The station that makes you feel good.
Yeah, differentiating the 2Ds. It starts like this. You know, asking an anthropologist, the question is nature or nurture, right?
Yeah.
So for me, and of course, everybody has an academic title, so it's always, it's not or, either or, it's an. But, you know, it's you have to choose. It cannot be water and fire at the same time.
Mm.
So for me, it's nature. You're born in your own nature. You have your fingerprint, your DNA. You have your set of parents. You will have to do with your set of parents of your life, all your life. You have your date of birth with your astrological quality of the time at that moment. You have your name, you have your birthplace. Those things in your life will never ever change. It's you, and you have only one, you know, appearance here on planet Earth in that particular lifetime. That's your essence. That is who you are. Then things happen. That's what you say. Circumstances. Circumstances happen, right? So circumstances, which is then nurture, of course, have an influence. And I always say, if you have, you know, you have a garden and you you throw some seeds of carrots somewhere in a beautiful spot in your garden, and it's sunny and good soil and enough water and enough love, and you have beautiful, big, tasty carrots. And the other half, you saw in a darker corner with poor soil and no light. And at the end, you will have crooked carrots. You know, they will be small and crooked and with worms in it, but it will never be a cauliflower.
Yeah.
Carrots it will be. So circumstances make a person thrive or will make a person distorted, depending on the circumstances. Of course, the more intense the circumstances are, the more you can expect logically consequences which are not a symptom. Because if you can explain the symptoms by the circumstances, it's not a symptom. It's a logical, psychological reaction, which is healthy.
Yeah. Brilliant.
What we prescribe on things that are not logical, not understandable, regardless of the circumstances, regardless of the personality and the upbringing and the social background. That is where the state persists. And that's the most difficult, because we tend to go into psychological analysis and take the circumstances into account, which tell us, the main thing they tell us, the circumstances, is the sensitivity of the person, which is in his state, not in the circumstances.
It's consultations themselves, I mean, it even now, as we're all, it's a learning curve, isn't it? And we're all is learning. But it's interesting where you can pick up during a conversation where the conversations with what you're talking about and how to differentiate. And sometimes the patient can come in and they're all explosive energy, and it's like, this is wrong with me, that's wrong with me, that's wrong with me. You know, and if they're mineral, you know, they're organized and they've got lists, or they blah, blah, blah. Or you've got somebody else who's asking questions and they start laughing at themselves, even, you know, and they're saying, oh, why did I ask? Why did I say that? I'm so silly. And then you've got the deeper ones who are just so, what's the word? Controlled, you know. But then over a course of 60 minutes, 90 minutes or so, you see how things start to open up. And sometimes it's the last thing they say, isn't it? And the last thing, I've been in consultations and it's like you're thinking, oh my God, you know, we're all homeopaths, we all repertorize. I know we're not supposed to, but it happens, right? Remedies pop in no matter how much you try not to. And things, you're going here, you're going there, you're thinking, etc. And it's one thing they'll say at the end, and you think, oh my God, that's it. It's a fascinating journey, isn't it? When you've mentioned, you know, you've talked about 2D, you've talked about 3D, but sometimes it's just that fusion that happens, isn't it, at a chosen time?
Yes, absolutely. And the two things to differentiate, as I said already, is the personality. You deal with the personality, of course. And so you get a hint of the personality. Everybody is behaving better in your consultation room than they behave outside. So every little hint you can, magnify a little bit. And as you said, the end of the consultation where the information comes, sometimes the most important information, almost always is animal, almost always, because they keep the best for the rest.
Survival
Thank you
of the fittest, isn't it, eh? Eh? The animal kingdom.
if you deserve it, you'll get the juicy bit at
It feels
the
like
end.
the first 16 minutes were there to make an impression, and then they found out, oh, the time is running out, I need a prescription, and then it comes out.
Yeah,
Oh,
that's actually quite well said, you know.
thank you. Thank you. I really love these little nuggets that you give. If someone starts, oh, for example, that's your plant. If someone keeps the best information till the end, that's your animal. And if it's just me, I didn't, it's your 2D.
They're not always that literal, you're right. But at the end of a 2D consultation, you might find yourself having had to ask many questions because they wait for your question because you're the professional, you know what you're doing, that's what they think. And so you ask questions and they answer to the best of their ability, again, ability, because they want to help you to do a proper work. So and since they answer your question and not usually not talk so spontaneously, some they do, like Waters, you cannot stop Waters, but most of them you can. At the end, you realize that you don't know anything about their siblings, their parents, their friends, their neighbors, their colleagues. They only talked about themselves. So they might not be that so literal, like I, me, mine, but in the end, you realize it's on the theater of their life. They're the main character, actually the only character. All the rest is background.
This
Oh,
takes
so
me
well
onto a
said.
very unusual, not a question, but just what your thoughts are on this. Let's thinking laterally. How would homeopaths go about treating someone who has the traits of narcissism? Because we all know that that thought process is always correct. Everybody is wrong. So the fact they're actually sitting in a chair in front of you is a big thing anyway, right? Because that's past a big step forward for someone with that trait. Anyway, what are your thoughts? It's just interesting. It popped into my head, so I had to ask.
I don't know because I find that the half of the population, especially male, seems to be narcissists these days. I mean, that's what my female patients tell me.
Interesting.
So I think it's another label. I wouldn't even know what exactly is a narcissist. I mean, for me, everybody is, let's say, an interesting human being in front of me
Yeah, with a story.
with a story, and I just listen. And listening is basically an art. Like
Listening is an
listen
art.
with full presence and let the person, like, give all the space. To show him, to share him, to be himself. And I'm the receiver, eyewitness, and then I prescribe.
Everybody has a story to tell. We just have to listen, right? Or somebody has to listen. Every single person. You know, now, thankfully, I have to say, for social media, there are some very beautiful videos that are being shared a lot nowadays, which are on someone, God forbid, who was homeless and, you know, they've been asked questions, or someone randomly has been stopped in the street and they look very angry. And the person asks them just a few handful of questions, and you see them totally change. You know, perception is so important, not to overdo one's own visual experience of perception, because we all perceive, yeah? So, oh my God, that person's angry, or that, but we don't actually know until you speak to them, right?
Exactly. I
Looks can
think
be deceiving, right?
absolutely. I think if you're in your consultation room with genuine curiosity, like how is it to be you? That's actually enough. Like I'm really genuinely curious. I want to know. I want to understand, be with you. Like almost be in your shoes. How is it to be you?
This is my favorite question all the time. When I'm in a consultation and I ask, a patient is sitting in front of me and they say, oh, I have a headache. And yeah, it's just like a headache. And then I tell them, look, I am sitting in front of you and I want to know how you experience the headache because I don't have it. So how will it be for me to experience that same headache? What would I have to do to myself to feel that headache, to experience it in your shoes? And that's where they understand, oh, yes, that person doesn't know what a headache feels like, or headache can be different for everyone.
Absolutely. And also, they realize you take your time. You're not satisfied with the label. Oh, yeah, headache. Oh, here's my prescription. Yeah, you're really interested and you take your time.
And then they step back. It is always, I've seen, they step back, or even if they don't, because they have not observed in the first consultation, they will come up in the ne next consultation and they'll tell you the most amazing ways of headaches. What a beautiful explanation of headaches from them in the next consultation. Oh, I actually thought about how it feels like, starts like this, then this happens, and then it is, this is how it ends. And I've also noticed this helps me at that time. That's like giving them the power of listening to themselves at the same time.
Yeah, that it matters, absolutely.
But what it's so beautiful, isn't it? Because we've all had patients who've been very unwilling to share, and they've maybe shown a bit of dislike or disapproval at certain questions. But because homeopaths listen and they wait, it's never confrontational. It's just listen, 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 absorb, absorb, take, take, take. So many times they go home and you'll get your messages, you know, get a WhatsApp or you get a call or a text, whatever, and they'll say, oh, by the way, you know, you asked this question and I've been thinking. But that forms this element of trust, isn't it? It's so important just to listen and not dictate or just say, well, hang on, you know. It's just listen and absorb. Everybody wants to get so many things off their chest. It's amazing, isn't it?
Absolutely. And also some addition maybe is listening and not guiding, because that's let's say the mistake we often make, that we think we understand or we think that's important, and the patient said three or four things, gave examples, and then we pick one and we ask more about a particular thing. The classic one, you said stuck, tell me more about stuck. No. Now you're starting to make a stuck case. So I always say, if you think you have this red light going on, like that's a dot. I always call this a dot. When something is important, you don't know what it means, but you know it means something. So that's a dot. So keep it in mind. You have a dot here. Don't grab it and don't ask questions. Wait for it to return. It is it important? It will come back. And then you wait again. And for the third time, when it comes back, then you know for sure it belongs to the vital level. If it doesn't come back, forget about
Yeah.
it.
Because sometimes they're just fancy words they've heard during the day or when they were listening to something, and they'll use it and they will never come back. But in cases, for example, they are with you for some time, you will see a pattern returning and a pattern returning. A crushed person will be a crushed person in the second, in the third consultation, and then you know, okay, this is the deeper pattern.
Yes,
This is where I
exactly.
have to go.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, we have those words in the beginning of, but that I think it's now obsolete, beginning of the system theory, like mineral would be a structured person. Yeah. Forget about it. Yeah. Everybody who's, let's say, beyond the miasmatic chart of psychosis. I do like this because you have this miasmatic chart from Sankaran again, going from acute here to syphilitic there, syphilitic there. And then you have this psora, and then you have psychosis, and then you have syphilis. So it goes from bad to worse. And then you have this in-between miasms. I think everybody by now is familiar with it. So everybody from psychosis on is structured, is fixed. It's a fixed miasm. And the next one is carcinogen. And carcinogen has, how to say, a horror of chaos, because chaos equals death.
It's right,
Chaos is fatal. So they have to be perfectionistic, and they have to be in time, and they have to do everything has to be in the proper place, like arsenic, right? So it's that's carcinogen miasm.
I
But
loved it.
every plant of the carcinogen miasm will be structured and orderly and in time and everything. So if a person, yeah, I'm a very structured person, doesn't make them 2D. So these are those words, as you say, Nyla, that we should not be, stuck on or hold on to. This word I know is. You also have to understand every word and example in context. That's what I'm trying to say, I guess.
I really loved this example, Anne, because this is what happens because structure is really, really important for cancer miasm. Otherwise, everything will be out of control. They have to keep. I have. This reminds me of a few patients. They even the dreams are very structured. They have boxes in their dreams where everything is lined, and it goes into chaos. In cancer, carcinosin dreams or people who need the carcinosin remedy. And I don't remember any of my mineral patients saying that they have structured dreams or
No.
dreams of boxes or this or that. The only thing is because they are always feeling like they are less than, or they're losing something, or they're losing their
Yeah.
structure, or they need to make extra effort to reach there.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, it's
But the word
so
structure,
fascinating.
and also we are living in a society where perfectionism is the norm. You know, if you're less than, forget it. You will lose your job. You cannot afford to be sloppy or late or whatever. It's also an outside pressure that we have. And it's carcinosin miasm, as you say, but it's also tubercular, because tubercular is carcinosin plus tubercular traits, and it's also leprosy, because leprosy is carcinosin plus tuberculinum plus lepra, so they have the traits of all three, and of course syphilitic as well. So from psychosis on, they're all structured and orderly and etc.
Oh, very, it's also thank you. I think everyone listening will have a thinking moment after this session, how they are going to see the patients and how the structure or the orderly, because we see this. Oh, the house is white, immaculate, it's arsenicum, it's cancer miasm,
It's the miasm
it's
indeed.
the miasm,
Absolutely.
or the tubercular. Time is running out. Time is running out for all of us.
Yeah, thanks for that.
Time is even running out for this podcast
It actually has run out. It's been an absolute joy. We are actually at the end of this episode, and it's so delightful to speak to you. And by the way, thank you. Although
at the time of a few weeks back, we received your books. Thank you very much.
Okay.
We're signed copies, ladies and gentlemen, because that's who we are here at the Homeopathy Health Show. We get autographed books, okay? And and who needs celebrities? Because all the homeopaths are celebrities, right? So thank you very much for those books. And they've been very, very useful. And yeah, thank you for coming on the show.
Before we go, just can you give three quick tips or a word of advice for the new homeopaths that will be helpful and we can guide them throughout their life as a homeopath?
Three tips
or guides or words of wisdom.
Well, yeah, I would say be dedicated. It's a serious thing. Study hard. My students knew because it was on the walls. 10,000 hours is minimum.
Brilliant.
Yeah. And the longer you do it, the more you will love it.
Ah, thank you. Brilliant. Words of wisdom. The longer you do it, the more you love it. That's the love of homeopathy. Thank you, Anne. Thank you for being part of our show. We have really enjoyed every moment that we have spent with you, and hopefully we'll see you soon.
Okay. As I said, always my pleasure.
Before our next birthdays.
Or on our next birthdays.
Yes, that too.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us today.
I do hope you've enjoyed this week's episode of the Homeopathy Health Show. Tune in every week for inspiring conversations, bringing you all things health and well-being to your radio and podcast apps.
The more exposure the Homeopathy Health Show receives, the better for homeopathy around the world.
And please do support the show by clicking follow on our socials.
You can find us at www.homeopathyinpractice.co.uk and on Facebook and Instagram at Homeopathy in Practice. Do give us a follow on there. Let's promote the voice of homeopathy around the world together. Until next time, stay safe and take care.